I'm going to be quiet so I can pray for you all. And I mean it, really, I do. Hi, my name is Debbie. I'm a very grateful recovered alcoholic. My sobriety date is February 25th of 1983 by God's grace. And this is probably one of the hardest places for me to speak. I know it's crazy, but I haven't been here. I come here off and on throughout the years, but it's one of the places I never spoke at, so I'm a little nervous, so bear with me. So if I jump all over the place, just pretend it's you. It's all I got, a blame game, you know, that's how it's about. Anyway, I want to say thank you so much for everybody coming out, especially my buddies from the Greenhouse. Greenhouse rocks. Never been there? Sorry, I'm doing an advertisement, but everywhere rocks, and I know it does. But it just always means something when people come to support you, because when you don't think you really have it, that's when you know you have it, when you come to something like this. Anyway, I grew up in Michigan. Anybody from Michigan? I always have to ask that. Cool. Get with me after the meeting. We'll compare notes, how great it was. Anyway, I grew up in Michigan, and actually I grew up in a really nice neighborhood, and I didn't appreciate it at all. And I had an aunt that was an alcoholic. That was really awesome that she was an alcoholic, because she babysat us, I got to have alcohol. So it was kind of cool when she'd come to babysit us. And we would think it was those big things of Kool-Aid when it was a big jug of wine, you know. So my first drinking episode was the whole family. I'm talking seven kids, all right? Well, actually, two brothers weren't there, but about five of us were drunk when my parents came home, because we thought we were all drinking Kool-Aid. So that was my first taste, and I never stopped after that. And I didn't drink every day, and that doesn't mean that I wasn't an alcoholic. When I didn't drink, I made up for it. And I started early in my teens, because I had to look good, you know, when you're going to the little Catholic school and you got to pretend you're all gracious and so sweet when you're not. Anyway, I grew up in the suburbs. And this aunt was very, very close to me. She was very poor. And she meant a lot to me. And I had my first boyfriend. And she ended up dying. And that meant the world to me. She was one of my closest friends. Because my parents, my dad was always traveling. We had nannies that would come in. And, you know, I never saw, my parents were never around. So it was like run for whatever, you know. And I was always either having to babysit or go out and drink whenever I could had a chance. So what happened is when she died, that just put me over the edge. I'm like, there is no God. He wouldn't take this woman from me. So that was my rebellion stage. So I started to do burglaries, and I lived in a nice area. I mean, we had our own little crew. I mean, we had a chef, we had a locksmith, we're doing it all. You know, and the police are coming to the house trying to arrest my brothers because I'm looking like a saint. You know, that's just how it was. It was always blame the brothers, but yet they were doing their stuff on the side. But I never got caught. You know, and eventually it all comes out. You find out how sick all your family is. And my sister, she's out in the backyard growing pot, you know, and the neighbors are all coming over. And, you know, we all had our thing going on. It was just in different bedrooms, you know. And you know, we're all trying to look really good for the parents. They're never around, you know, so whatever. So I'll never forget the pot thing is really relevant because I couldn't do the, you know, and I'm going to mention drugs because Bill Wilson and Bob, Bill especially was a big drug addict. I don't know if you all knew that, but they don't talk about it a lot. So, hey, it's part of my story, and I'm saying it for a reason because they kept me going towards the end because alcohol couldn't keep me cranked up as fast, you know. So anyway, the point is that with this pot thing, we're all the neighbors coming over, and my mom found out, why are the neighbors coming all over? And we're all like, we don't know, you know. And of course, then now she's got to burn it or get rid of it, and then the whole neighborhood's, you know, on fire. I mean, it's like unbelievable. I mean, this is our nice, quaint little suburban family, you know, trying to look good, but we're really not. Everybody knows what you're doing, you know, and this is just leading me into different areas of the rebellion. And then my first boyfriend broke up with me, and I don't know how anybody was with their first boyfriend or girlfriend, but that is very devastating when you're a kid, you know, and two things at one time, and we're really sensitive people, and I still am. So I got into my little crowd of drinkers, and of course the boyfriends that drank all the time, and of course they were all alcoholics too, and I ended up, when I was growing up, my sister and I, we had a business detoxing, can you imagine this, I can't even think about it, deoxidizing cars for a living. at these foreign car dealerships. And the reason I talk about it is because I'd go and do the cars when she wasn't around or the boats or whatever, and I'd be drinking on the side. And then I'd be picking at her because she'd be detailing for 10 minutes on one spot. I'm like, come on, we got to get going. You know, my patience, love, and tolerance was not there. It got worse and worse. My morals, my judgments, my values, my family. I totally disregarded my family, and I was so selfish. I didn't realize how selfish I was until later on when I got in this program. You know, and then I had a, that business was like, I can't handle this anymore. It's too much responsibility. You know, so my sister, which was a great thing for me, was living in Tahoe. And I don't know if anybody knows Tahoe. It's a 24-hour town where you can drink in the mountains, which is absolutely beautiful. Of course, I never saw the scenery. I was drinking all the time. But anyway, she was living there, and she's like, Debbie, you got to come out here. You can, you know, you can. It's nice. You can get a job in the casinos. And I'm like, that's the land for me. I'm definitely going there. So I gave up the business and just took off. And, of course, my dad and everybody was totally pissed off, which I didn't care. That's just how I was. Didn't care about anybody, you know? And Tahoe was a definite experience. I will say this. I ended up meeting someone that was just like me, drank and drugged and did everything else, and it got to be so bad, I was hiding drugs in my underwear from my husband because I was afraid he'd steal my portion. We'd level out, you know, and I figured he won't go to the underwear area, so I'll just take it. That's cool there. I know it sounds crazy, but I was so sick. I think about this stuff, and I'm like, where the hell did I get that idea? And then I flush it half the time. I forget I had it. I mean, and we're talking a lot of money there, you know, but you're working in the casinos, you got to keep going, you know, and they give you these drink tokens as tips. Well, that's like an alcoholic's, you know, dream come true for tips. I mean, every night you could go drinking if you want. Well, I ended up marrying this guy that had the same problem as me. And ended up, there was a party like down the street. Our party at our house was too boring, so we went to somebody else's party. We're having a party at our house, but we're going to somebody else's. Where, I don't know where that came from. Anyway, there was more cars there, so we figured it'd be better. So, that's how insane we are. Anyway, so we go over there, and we had paint all over us. It was a painting party. We had an employee painting party, and I had paint all over me. And I'm thinking, oh, they'll never notice me. Yeah, okay. That's the ego I had. Anyway, of course, they did notice us, and they called the police on us, which was very offending. And, of course, my husband, he doesn't think about me. He's running like a rabbit, and I get caught. And, you know, I don't know where he's at. He's not even thinking about me. He's, whatever, fend for yourself. Which, you know, you realize this later on, how much love there was. And, not much. You got two alcoholics and drug addicts living in one house, and we got the brothers and the whole family, the Indians moving in. It's like, you know, what am I going to do? So, I mean, it became so chaotic. Anyway, I got arrested. I got drunk in public, resisting arrest, and obstructing an officer all in one night. Now, let me tell you, drunk in public is impossible to get in Tahoe, but I got it. How? I don't know. I mean, seriously, everybody's drunk there. Everybody. But the little angel that I was, and so when we go to court, court was the best. Because anybody that gets drunk in Tahoe, when you drink there, you have to come all the way back from wherever you're from, back to Tahoe. So, I mean, if you could have heard every case, it was a drunk case, every single one of them. And I'm thinking, oh, crap, I hope it doesn't tell my story. Oh, my God, you know. So my name comes up, and I'm like shivering like a leaf. And he goes, oh, Miss Metoxin, I know your husband, his uncle, your dad. I'm like, that's right, and it's their fault that I'm here. It's their fault. Because, you know, they're the ones that talked me into doing all this stuff. Anyway, I don't know how I got it. He said to me, this is true, and I couldn't believe it happened. He said to me, if you're going to continue drinking, Miss Metoxin, you're going to have to leave Tahoe. Well, what do you think I did? Well, I'm out of there in 2 minutes. So what had happened before we got married, and I missed this part, because this guy had an aunt, unbeknownst to me, that was in Al-Anon and AA. And I thank God, I tell this every time we have my story, because I still talk to her over 20 years. And she came to my dressing room. And mind you, I couldn't even talk. I was so out of it. I was so drugged out and coked out and whatever. And I remember her standing in the doorway, and she said, you know, baby or Debbie, if you ever want to feel, you know, talk to me. And I don't know why, as out of it as I was, I remembered those words in her face and that love that she had. I never felt that. At least I didn't know how. I was so covered up with drugs and alcohol. And, you know, when things got rough, as they usually do, my husband's dad was an abusive man to his mother, so that carried into him. And of course, abuse was very evident in our house, and I mean, it was so bad. I even had a black eye on my wedding day, and I covered it up. But that's how low my self-worth was. I even married this guy, thinking, oh, nobody will ever ask me again. I mean, that's how little I got inside, you know. And we didn't really love each other, but God has such an awesome plan to bring his aunt into my life. And when it got really, really bad, I mean, I was hiding in closets at this point. I was so scared of this man. And I called her, and she lived in Napa, which is absolutely beautiful, but I didn't, it was boring there for me. But she did those 20 questions. And I don't know if anybody's new, and if you are, and you don't know what to do, and you don't understand if you're an alcoholic or not, because I wasn't sure, because I didn't drink every day. I never got caught. I just kind of slid under the wire when I got pulled over. How, I don't know. But anyway, she did those 20 questions, and I tell everybody I got a true A on that one. And it was the first time I ever really was honest with myself, let alone anybody else. And I didn't even know her very well, but I felt so comfortable with her because she had such a peace. And she had something I wanted, but I just wasn't sure what it was. But she was real good about selling. You know, Clarence used to say, this isn't a program of attraction, it's a program of sales. Because who's going to be attracted to a drunk? And I never understood that. And I thought, well, wait a minute, that's the opposite of what we say in here. But then I do, kind of in a way, because you have to kind of sell and help people to understand what this thing is about in order for them to know they've got a place to go to get better and well. Because I was a very sick-minded person. And I didn't love anybody, let alone myself. And when I got to Napa, Jean, this was the lady that was his aunt, she obviously became my sponsor, but she never really came right out and said, and I found out later on she only had a year sober. It was amazing, the wisdom she had, and she was so into this. But she was real sneaky about it. Well, you know, Debbie, since that marriage of yours isn't really going good, I go to Al-Anon too, you know, maybe you can just go and maybe help your marriage. I'm like, oh, yeah, okay, yeah, sure. Well, he's still drinking. And I can't even believe I'm still with him, but it was my security blanket because I didn't have any money. It was always spent. I mean, our last thing was to spend was on bills and everything else, so I barely made it every check to whatever to be able to escape from this man. But the good news is I stayed in Al-Anon, and I didn't really, how do you say, I didn't really work the program. I saw all the AA guys going upstairs, all the cute guys, and I'm like, wait a minute, Gene, something's wrong with this picture. Where are they all going? She goes, well, that's AA. And I'm like, oh, I don't know. I don't think I'm an alcoholic. I'm saying this under my breath, you know. She goes, you know, she's real tricky. She goes, you know, if you go to AA and Al-Anon, you're a double winner. I'm like, really? So she had some real cute little slick tricks, which is funny because I pull the same stuff myself now, you know, with people. And an honest heart, of course. And so I said, well, okay, I'll check that out. But see, I was such an egomaniac with such an inferiority complex. I wore sunglasses to AA meetings because I didn't want anybody to recognize it. Mind you, I grew up in Michigan. What is that all about? This is how crazy I got. I mean, like I'm a little movie star or something. And then I remember a girl coming in meetings and doing the same thing as me. And I'm like this, gee, get a load of this chick with the glasses on. You know, I was so judgmental. Because I would hear people's stories, and I grew up in the little fancy suburbs like I was better than everybody. Hell, I wasn't any different than anybody else. I was just sick, you know, and just didn't realize it, how sick I was, until I started to trust people and actually let people love me and let them into my life. And I used to go to candlelight meetings because I was so scared to share. I had never heard anybody talk about their feelings and the drunkalogs and all this stuff. But the first meeting I went to, believe it or not, it was in a bar. It was closed. It was a breakfast meeting. And we had it in the back room. It was incredible. And I mean, I cried like a baby. I couldn't stay in that room. I was so embarrassed, crying in and out, in and out, in and out. And Jean's just like, whatever, okay, whatever. She's just paying no attention to me. She wouldn't cuddle me. She just, whatever. She wouldn't talk me into coming to anything. She just, okay. Which was good, because she knew if she talked me into anything, I wouldn't go. That's just my character, and I'm sure that's a lot of others. Rebellion, if anybody talks to you, it's like me putting the flyers on the table for my husband to get into AA. Yeah, and the book, and all, like he's going to come because I'm putting all the flyers on the table. Anyway, I really started to get into AA, and as usual, the drinking, my husband's disease got worse. And I mean, it got to the point where he was drunk on a motorcycle, and you know, he says he only had two drinks, but this is what really put me on the edge. I'm not drinking, so I'm pissed off. He ends up in the hospital. This guy's almost dying. He's got blood from head to toe because he's on a motorcycle. And when you get in a motorcycle accident, if your head gets hit, there's so much more blood that comes out. And all I'm thinking about is me, gosh, I cannot believe he went out and drank and spent all our money. I'm not thinking about this guy. He's almost dying. And she pulls me to the side. She goes, oh, aren't we the selfish ones? Your husband's almost dying, and I'm thinking, I don't love this man anyway. Why should I care about him? She says, oh, okay, so you've changed already so much. Don't you think you should keep it a little green and have compassion for him? And picture sick on his forehead. I always say that because that's what helped me stay. I stayed in AA for 2 years with this man because that's what they taught me, not to do major decisions in the first year, because we don't make decisions very well. I mean, you see after a meeting, it takes 20 minutes or 30 minutes to figure out where we're going to go. So, you know, I'm still working on that one. Anyway, I just let somebody else make the decisions. I don't have to worry about it. So anyway, what had happened is he's in the hospital, and I actually realized I was jealous of him because he was drinking and I wasn't. Well, when he, of course, woke up out of the hospital thing and started coming back to the house, he started really getting nasty. And he stopped drinking, and I don't know if anybody's been with someone that doesn't drink, and you're living with them, they're meaner than any wildcat that you've ever met, because they're not doing anything to get out of what their disease is. They're just taking it out on you verbally or physically. So, of course, my head's running rampant because he again went and stayed out all night. And the next morning, he came home, oh, yeah, with the gift, the ring, and the breakfast, like he's going to make up to me. And I'm so pissed off because I'm up all night long worrying, and how am I going to, you know, I got to work the next day, and I feel like I'm supporting this guy, and he's not doing anything. And I picked up a butcher knife because he started coming at me, and that fear was major. But I'm sober now, and I'm supposed to be thinking level-headed here, but I had a lot of fear because I was just getting sober. I didn't have the God concept truly there yet. And when I picked up that butcher knife, I knew it was God. To this day, I know. He said, if you stay here, you're going to end up killing each other. So I ran to my neighbor next door, who just happened to be a Christian. She didn't go to AA, but she had been taking me to church off and on, and I'd go to church with her just to escape from him. You know, anything to get away from him. But little seeds were getting planted little by little. You know, my sponsor would, you know, she would have me memorize that third step prayer on page 63, which I still say under my breath at every meeting, which is God's mercy for me and my saving grace every meeting I go to. But anyway, it's the best thing that ever happened. And I went to a women's shelter, and at the shelter, and I ended up taking all the money out of the account. And before I left, Jean, you know, I went over to Jean's house, and she said, Debbie, you seem like you need a little bit of prayer, and you might need to get with God. She had this little rose garden in the back, and her poodle died, and she buried him back there. And I went back there, and Napa is very beautiful. The vineyards are unbelievable. It was sunset, and I went out there on my little knees, and I didn't care if anything hurt my knees or whatever. It was unreal, but I could feel the presence of God go through my whole body and praying to him. And right there is when I knew I had the courage to leave and move to Florida to be with my parents, which I did not want to move to Florida because I hated the heat here. And I was from California, and this place isn't as cool as California. There goes the cool attitude again. So anyway, I ended up moving here, and living with my parents was not a piece of cake, but I'm so grateful to them. What's funny is I started to go to meetings, and all I did was stay in that rebellion stage and screaming out the window, driving down with my girlfriend from Chicago, who also hated Florida. We hate Florida, and we're going to AA. And I got 2 years sober. Yeah, that's a great 2 years sober. Oh, yeah, I knew it all. I know everything. I know what you need to do and what you need to do. Am I doing it? Heck no. You know, so anyway, this is my learning lesson. So I ended up going to, I'll never forget this, I ended up going to a meeting in Apopka. And I don't know if anybody's been to Apopka, but Apopka is a very rural area, okay? And I go in there late like I'm a movie star. But before this meeting, which really is unbelievable, my mom's aunt called the house, and she's going on and on, and I'm like trying to get out the door to go to my meeting. Like nobody knows I have a problem with alcohol, right? She goes, well, baby, where are you going? Where are you going? I'm like, well, Aunt Robbie, I gotta go. I can't tell you. I'm going to meet. She goes, baby, I've been in AA for 30 years or 20 some years. I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. Nobody ever told me this. And she started to tell me the history of my family and how about my parents and how the mother was schizophrenic, but she was really an alcoholic because they didn't depict that at the time. The people of that generation years ago, they were alcoholic, but they didn't understand it. It was schizophrenia. And her father was a bootlegger. And this is what my aunt had to go through, and my mom, and I didn't know any of this. But if that lady hadn't told me, I would have gone out and drank. Because I was looking around at my family thinking, I must not be an alcoholic. Maybe Jean just talked me into this because, you know, she's the aunt from my husband, and he's got a problem, and my head's going. So like I said, I go to this meeting in Apopka. I'm late. I forget going in the meeting. These guys are so patient. There are a lot of older guys when I first started going there. This is back in 85. Anyway, I'm bringing my little chair, squeaking in, getting in there, and thinking I'm like hipstick and cool. I'm like waiting to share, like I got all this profound words. Anyway, these guys, the first guy that shares, I couldn't believe this. The first guy that shares, well, my day, I went into the barn today, and chicken crept on my head, and I'm thinking, oh no, this is not happening. If this is what AA's like in Florida, I am not going to last. I am not going to last. You know what? That was the best thing ever happened to me. Best thing. Because these older guys put me in my place. They didn't put up with crap. I am not kidding you. And I needed that. I didn't need to see all the guys floating around and thinking I'm going to replace the husband for whatever. This is what I needed. I needed a father figure because my dad was traveling a lot and I wasn't close to him yet. So these guys were incredible. They took me under their wing. This guy took me on a boat tour that he built his own boat. Every now and then I go back there, but a lot of them have died. But still, sometimes we don't appreciate what's right in front of us. And even the people that are right in front of us, even next to you, could be a gift. Everything and everybody is either a gift or it's from the opposite world, which I won't go there. But I have to learn to pray about these things. Well, obviously, I stayed in Apopka for quite some time. And like I said, I started to go to TLC, which is a halfway house. And I think by going to that and getting out of myself and starting to do service work, that was the best thing that ever happened to me. And if you get out of the only way I can get out of myself is by doing for somebody else. That's my graciousness and my gratitude back to AA, because I should not even be here. Seriously, should not. I remember going in Tahoe, flying along with some guy doing coke on the dashboard in a two-seater plane, and getting down to the ground and his girlfriends are pissed off. I mean, this is the kind of stuff I think about. I shouldn't be going down the road, my husband's pissed off at me, the opposite way, a one-way street, the wrong way. I shouldn't be here. This is God and his protection, even during that time. You know, I know that people were praying for me. I know my parents were praying for me. They are definitely God believers, and I thank God for that. Anyway, I kind of ventured out of my little Apopka area. And I started going to the greenhouse on Morris Boulevard, which was really awesome. And I started going back there years later. I'd gone to different places. And you look, every place has got different gifts in AA. I call the central, this is the place of knowledge. There's more people with a lot older come here. That kind of looks a little bit like Apopka. But anyway, not in a bad way. I'm talking good. Seriously, I am. I can be honest today. I can try. Anyway, what was really neat is I started going to the greenhouse, and some of the things they weren't into at that time was not what I needed. I wanted to get closer to God. I was at that third year, and when you get to about your third year, you start looking around the rooms. You start thinking, who's happy around here? What's going on here? Something's missing in me. I was getting a little lonely, a little freaked out. So I started to look to the people that were a little bit more spiritual. People are talking about God. Well, you know what? I think I'll check these people out. Even though I'm scared of them, I'm going to check them out and listen to them and try to talk to them. Well, what was funny is, I don't even remember how my sponsor was Kay Harris at the time, and she was living with Grace Snyder, who was Clarence Snyder's wife, who's one of the first 40. He used to live in this area. He was a pretty, I guess, rough kind of guy, what I heard. I didn't meet him. He died a year before I got here. But I met Grace, and I didn't know any of the history. I met Grace for Grace. But I'll tell you what, that lady taught me how to be a lady today, how to be a grown-up today. She was my mom, because my mom wasn't there. And by meeting her, I used to see people from all over the country come over to her house, and she would sit with them and pray, and she'd teach them the Bible, and she'd teach them the big book and where it's all from. And at first I didn't understand it, but I'd see these people change, and they'd come from, I'm serious, all over the country. A guy from England came one time to see Clarence, and he was dead, and he didn't even know it. But what's incredible is her and Clarence, Dr. Bob was Clarence's sponsor, so I learned to do the steps the way they originally taught, with the three books, Dr. Bob and Good Old Timers, the Bible, and the Big Book. And I praise God for having that gift, because before I moved here, I had Jean as my sponsor, and nobody could replace her. She was the gift from God, and there's just not going to be anybody sponsored like that, you know. Your first sponsor is a very special person, because that's the person that really brought you out of your little egg, your little shell, I call them. I was in a caterpillar, and I turned into a little butterfly. But what was neat is they did these retreats. Now, I had this girl that was always talking about God and Jesus running around. I thought she was a fruitcake. But she was always happy. And I thought, well, you know, okay, I'll check out these. I'm handing out flyers for the retreat. You know, the little social queen that I was, you know. Not really doing AA, just doing the social queen thing. That's not to look at me stuff. You know, get involved in all these things and sponsor all these people. But are we doing our thing here? Am I doing my thing in here? What am I doing? What am I doing? What's my motive here? And Gracie was very humble about stuff. She was very stern, though, too. But the three questions she did ask me, even though I had already been in AA a couple of years, is, what are you willing to, are you an alcoholic? Is your life unmanageable? And what are you willing to do to stay sober? And those are the three questions that Dr. Bob asked Clarence. And she passed that on to me, and that's what I pass on to the people that I get to be gifted with in my life today. And I praise God, because it really had me, after even a couple of years, I still needed to think about where I was at in my walk. Because your head can get going in 2 minutes. I don't care how sober you are or how long you've been in this program, that drink thought will come in there. But it can last if I don't think about God. And the one thing that keeps me sober is the people here, the love. The love. I miss my friends so much if I went out and drank, you know? But anyway, I started going to these retreats. I thought, you know, this girl paid for it, I'll take a vacation. So I went on this little retreat with this girl that was like a little partier like me, a little AA partier. We all have them. They're all there. And we go up on your little, this is so long ago, 280Z, the little tiny car. I just think we're so cool driving up there. And this is going to be so much fun. And, oh, yeah, I had fun. I didn't even barely listen to any of the speakers. But the people that I saw at that retreat had something I truly wanted. I just wasn't sure what it was. And now, mind you, this is my first retreat. About two retreats later, I finally got it together, because I wasn't jumping off the sidewalk away from these people finally. I was finally going to try to talk to them. That's how stubborn I was. So about a year or so later, there's a guy in AA. He had been sober a month, and he went to one of these retreats, and I'm telling you, this guy changed like I'd never seen anybody change. I couldn't believe how much he changed. So I thought, well, you know, maybe I do need to check that out and try to do what they're doing at that retreat, and I'll go. Because I thought, oh, I don't know if I want to be that Jesus freak thing. I don't know. That's a little bit too strange for me. But, you know, look at all the stuff I did before. What difference does it make? It didn't make any sense at the time, really. But anyway, the point is this retreat, I was so bad. But about Saturday night, I canoed most of the night with a bunch of people. We went in canoes, and we did a little AA meeting on the lake. And so I was exhausted for Sunday. And Sunday morning was like the best part of this retreat. And this guy kept telling me all the whole time, are you going to listen to someone? I'm like, no, maybe later. Who knows? But anyway, he kept telling me, I'm so glad he did, because he had the courage to be a warrior for God. That's what I call him. Because no matter how much I rejected this person, he still kept loving me, still kept being my friend. And he was only a month sober. A month sober. It doesn't matter how long you're sober. Grace used to tell me, it's what you have. You can hug somebody, you can love somebody, you can be there for somebody. It doesn't matter. And I got 2 years, but I had 2 years of nothing. Because my ego was so far out there. And anyway, so Sunday morning he comes to my door, and he's like, Debbie, come on, you know, this is the best part of the show. I'm like, Mark, I'm sleeping in, I watched ZZ Top, they were on Johnny Carson, they're never on TV, I've been up late. Don't you get it? I mean, this poor guy. I seen him too a couple times, and it was so funny. Anyway, so I had gone to the dentist the Friday before this retreat, and the dentist told me I had to get surgery on my tooth because it was into the bone. It was really, really bad. And it never bothered me until Saturday night and towards the morning. And he must have done something, because all of a sudden I'm laying in my bed, and it's like I rose from the dead. I'm like, oh, I guess I'll go down there and maybe honor these people. All right. Like they know I'm even gone or there. So I go down, and we're in this little circle, and they're praying with people. I thought, oh, this is very weird, too cultish for me, too religious for me. But then I saw Kay and Grace. And they came over to me, and they just took me by the hand, so sweet and lovingly. And they sat, and they prayed with me. And It was the most incredible thing I ever had in my life. And they did this little sinner's prayer. And they told me this is what Clarence did. And this is what he did with people that come. And they asked me to forgive my sins. Like they did the confession, the first six steps that they did. And the big book, it talks about that. And I did that, and it was the most incredible thing I had ever felt in my life. I felt the heat go through my body like I never felt before, and a peace like I never felt. And I still get that today, because I stay close to Him. And I thank Him for every day I have today. And you know what's funny? I've still been going on those retreats for 20 years now. And I started a candlelight meeting, because I know how hard it is to be a newcomer, and how shy you can be, and how hard it is to talk about God and your things that are going on in you. And I do that because I don't know about you, but I was periodic, so Friday and Saturday are like my big nights out. So I thought, well, we'll start the candlelight on a Friday because they're probably all restless and discontent, you know, trying to figure out what to do. After the speaker meetings, it was the only meeting that everybody was in the whole, because every meeting was a speaker meeting at this retreat, but this is the only meeting was an open discussion meeting. So, you know, they got to get their all their big talks out. So I'm still going on these retreats today. It was so incredible. Anyway, doing these retreats, it taught me a lot, and Gracie ended up dying later on, and it was hard at first, but you know, you get to it when you get close to the God thing, and you're doing the right thing, what He wants you to do, instead of what you think you should do when you go to these meetings. And by that, I was working at a public utility water company for 10 years, and I ended up going back to Napa Valley to see my sponsor. My sister was getting married, and I ended up meeting this guy. He's my second husband, and he's got all this time in the program. He says he's got this big relationship with God, and a very compulsive decision. I end up marrying this guy, which is a total waste of my time, but I did it anyway, which is totally addict behavior. Fast and furious. So what happens when it's fast and furious? Fast and furious out. 6 months. I gave up a job of 10 years. And pretty much my life, it was a decision I'm not real proud of today, but it taught me something. I was sponsoring all these people to not feel what I needed to feel and do what I need to do for God, and getting all puffed up. And He has this way of, when you're too heavenly minded, you're no earthly good. And there's things I still learn today, and I have to keep here and learn how to move it here, where He's at, you know, instead of where Debbie's at. So anyway, it was the best thing ever happened, because through that, I ended up working a big, huge company, doing human resources, and I was assistant manager. My manager ended up being pregnant. She ended up quitting, so I have to hire a manager for human resources. There's a lot of stories behind this. These are my miracle stories. So anyway, this guy I hire, he was a Christian, too. I crack up when I think about that today. That scares me sometimes. He ended up hiring his cousin, and he tried to fire me. He went to hire a topless dancer in my place, but tried to lie to me and say I wasn't doing my job, and demoted me to production secretary, which is probably what I needed for my ego at that time. I thank God for that decision, because when I moved down there to this new job, I got a better boss. He appreciated me. He welcomed me. He took me under his wing. He just was such a loving man. The best thing I ever did. And when my 90-day thing came up, my evaluation, this man came down. And I said, you know, Ken, I've been praying for you. He says, you have? And I said, yeah, I've been praying conviction on you. He says, what do you mean by that? That you would see the error of your ways and what you've done and how you've lied to me and how you hired that girl as a topless dancer and you tried to fire me. And he started crying. And you know, that guy ended up quitting that job, and I stayed at that job a couple more years. But the water company that I worked at for 10 years, I prayed for 6 years to get back in there. And I've been there for 5 years now. That's totally God. Totally God. But the good news is, even at the job, there's a lot of stuff you have to learn to deal with in AA. That's a big one. Big one. I don't know if anybody can relate to this one. Anger. Big one. Rage. Anger. And I didn't realize how much I had because of all the abuse and all the drinking and all the things I did to myself and all the men I was with and all the sick, perverted things I did. And my values and morals were so bad. That even getting sober, sometimes we don't want to deal with the real issues because it's painful to go to counseling. I tried the worldly counseling. I got absolutely nothing out of it. I got walked in church. I felt like I had my tail between my legs when I started to go to a church to counseling. I learned a little bit different because they prayed before and they prayed after, which I learned in AA, and I had to be open-minded to that. It was the best thing that ever happened to me. And this lady that was praying for me and doing my counseling, she would touch my arm, and I would just start crying. And I was like, whoa, This is too, and she was blind. She didn't know me from Adam. And she would talk about stuff that was in my life. And I'm like, how the heck does this lady know? Because God, she was an incredible lady. She barely even charged me money. She didn't care about the money. She cared about me as a human being. And this was some time in the program. And this was at that job of 5 years. And the reason I went to this counselor is because a few years after that I hadn't dealt with my anger, where does it go? Either it goes on your family, your friends, or your job. And you know where it went? On my job. The customers. And my boss, how gracious she is, and I praise God for her today. She suspended me for a week. My ego went like down to there. It was like, whoa. You know, but I'll tell you what, best thing ever. I talk about the trials because the trials are what bring me closer to God and what bring me to a place where I need to be totally in submission to Him and His people, to be able to be a better servant. And maybe somebody else has to go through this experience that they might be hurting and not know how to do it. But I remember that week when I was on suspension. I went to a few meetings, but not very many. I tried to get in counseling. I went to my doctor to see if there was medication physically I needed to do. I counted all areas, spiritually, physically, emotionally, because it's a disease of threefold. And I figured maybe I've gotten away from something. Well, you want to know something? I'm still at that job, and I got a raise Friday. Okay, but this is not by me. It's by God. Who else would this be? Not me. You know, and other things too. I just moved, and I was kind of a little fearful about moving. Didn't have the money, didn't have the people, didn't even have the place. But I wanted, my goal was, and I prayed to God, I said, God, if this is your will, let it be by June 30th. And it was only 2 weeks, and I could stay through July, but I wanted pretty much to have my own place by now. And I had my own place, but I just didn't have good roommates, and I didn't want to have to go through that again. And I prayed about it. The money was given to me, all of it. I had like a couple hundred, but I asked for help and I got it. I was shocked. But I really prayed about it. I said, look, you know, if this isn't your will, God, close every door tightly. And if it is, open the door so I can see clearly, because I'm a little dingy. Maybe have two people tell me, because I'm a little dingy. I don't know if my decisions are always right. So I got godly counsel from my sponsor, and she told me it was okay and everything was good. Then I got the money. Then Michael, who's in the back row, I will say his name, called me up because God led him. Didn't even know Michael. Didn't even know this guy. Just went to meetings. Called me up and said, you know, God put it on my heart to call you and tell you, don't worry about the movement. I'll get all the guys. Don't worry about it. And that was my biggest, honest to God, fear. Because I'd always had money, had movers, and be able to have the money to do all this stuff. I thought, I don't know how I'm going to do it. And it was all taken care of. Even down to the fact that when I had to get all the boxes unpacked, the guy from work was at my house the next day. I'm talking about the miracles today because, you know what, sometimes we don't even see them when they're right in front of us. And I appreciate every little thing today. And I try to appreciate the people in my life. And sometimes I do take them for granted. But God has a way of opening my heart and tearing it apart and making me realize what I need to do today. And there's a couple things I wanted to share that I learned from Gracie and on his retreats. And there's a portion in third edition, which I truly love, because this is the one I was raised on. You know, everybody's got their first sponsor, their first book, and it's kind of a... My book is so torn up, and I'm using Clarence's book because I can't read his. Mine's so bad, I couldn't read mine, so I didn't want to be embarrassed before falling over. But anyway, seriously, my book is really bad. 2:16 and 17, it's he thought he could drink. And this is a story about Clarence and Bill Wilson. And they're witnessing and telling their story about how this thing works, AA. And you don't hear much about it because the stories aren't always a big thing for us. We're always in the 164. But there are a couple stories very relevant for me. Dr. Bob's story, and of course this one, and I won't go into the other stuff because it's not part of the whole deal here. So the story of my introduction into AA begins with the activities of my wife. She had a hairdresser who used to tell her about a brother-in-law who had been quite a drinker and about some doctor in Akron who had straightened him up, which is Dr. Bob. My wife didn't tell me this, but one Sunday afternoon when Mary was trying to get the cobwebs out of my mind, Clarence and his sister-in-law, the hairdresser, called at the house. I was introduced to them, and Clarence proceeded to put on his 12-step work. I love that. I love that old AA talk. I was kind of shocked about anybody talking about themselves the way he did, and my impression was that this guy's a little touched. You know, newcomers think we're a little, like, out there, because we're talking all about ourselves. However, on a couple of other occasions, Clarence seemed to bob up at the last saloon that I would stop at on the way home every day. I resented it, of course. and offered Clarence his commission. He's going to pay this guy off. Whatever it might be, if he would please not bother me, because I had arrived at the conclusion that he was either solicitor for some alcoholic institute. One evening, I had gone out after dinner to take a couple of double headers, and I stayed a little later than usual. And when I came home, guess who was there? Clarence was sitting on the Davenport with Bill Wilson. And I do not recollect the specific conversation that went on, but I believe I did challenge Bill to tell me something about AA. And I do recall one thing I wanted to know, and what this was that worked so many wonders. And hanging over the mantle was a picture of Gethsemane, which is a picture of Jesus kneeling down and praying to our Father. And Bill pointed to it and said, "There it is. This is what works." But if we say this here, sometimes people are scared. And you know what Grace used to tell me? If God will scare you away, the booze and drugs will scare you back. I'm not ashamed about my God today, because if it wasn't for him and you people, I would not be here today. I was raised in an environment of AA that was true old AA. I was taught that when you go to speak in respect to the people you're in front of, to dress up, to be a lady, because I finally became one. And I wasn't one when I was drinking and using. And I wasn't one when I first got sober. And sometimes I'm still not. You know? And I need to remember that I can be. So it's kind of good to do it in respect of others, instead of myself all the time. But I will say this. If you're in AA and you're not having fun, this is from my dear friend Dick Stoltz, you need to remember three precious words, and it's in the 12 and 12, happy, joyous, and free. And if you don't have those, go to somebody that does. And they're in here. Just sometimes we don't like them because they're a lot like us. I don't know about y'all, but everybody's got one. Everybody's got a needle, and it's somebody. And we can either let them be our God, or we can either not let them and pray for them. And I'll tell you what, prayer is an incredible thing. Because I hated the guy in my office. He's the one that helped me find my apartment today. He's the one that helped me get my boxes unpacked today. And that guy drove me nuts for I don't know how long. Now he's driving everybody else nuts in the office, and I'm like, oh, this is great. He doesn't bother me at all. Give him rides home. Doesn't bother me. Calls me bitching about his evaluation Friday. I'm like, whatever. You got one, you got a job. I think so much about what I have today. I mean, I would even go bowling with people, and I hated bowling. But I'd go just to be happy and be with other people. I got out of my comfort zone and would go to coffee, and I wasn't a big coffee smoker, but of course you become one once you get in here. That's just part of the peer pressure. You gotta hang out and do all that, you know. But anyway, I'm so grateful to AA because, like I said before, I wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for AA, but I had to get an open mind. An open mind to God and what the true roots of this history was. And if you don't know the history, if you had cancer, what would you do? If you had leukemia, what would you do? You'd read every book there was. And so that's what I started to do. Because when that emptiness hits, it hits hard. And if you want to know where it truly comes from and get close to God, read these incredible gifts from God, I call them. And this is just, I'll be honest, this is just a kindergarten way to get back to God, the big book. Because they knew that original manuscript said, really, we see a person feel us thoroughly follow the directions, but we knew we wouldn't follow directions, so they changed it to suggestions. But yet, all through the book, it says directions. Because I need direction today, and I still need direction today, and I have to be humble. Because I'm only this far away from drinking today. And I don't want to do that anymore, because I like my life today. I love my friends in AA today. I like my little home and my little cat today. And I love my Jesus and my church and everything today, and I'm proud of that today. Because you know what? There was a time when I didn't like anything about me today. And I do like a little bit about myself more than I ever did before. But it comes in little increments. And one thing I'll share, too, is I went into the hospital. It was only for like a day and a half. And I had so many commitments in AA. I must have been on that phone the whole time. I had lost so much blood. And what's unbeknownst to me, and I didn't know this, but my doctor was a Christian. And she goes to my church. Didn't even know. But she had to tell me, and I know some people kind of maybe relate, is I had to stop learning giving so much and learn how to receive. She said, you know, that's a sin. You're not allowing people to bless you. You're not allowing people to love you. You're not allowing people to give to you. And I had to do this when I had to move. I had to allow people to help me and love me and be there for me, even though I kind of felt like I owed them my life. I remember maybe God's the one that's doing this for me. You know, and it's 5 till I'm going to share this one thing. This I always share every time I get to be able to be in front of people, which I'm not always excited about, believe me. But I'm being honest. But anyway, it's in page 99, and I'm sure you all know it's my favorite prayer, St. Francis of Assisi. And maybe you can think about it like I do, because I love this prayer. It's probably going to make me cry, so get ready. Lord, make me a channel of thy peace, that where there is hatred, I may bring love, that where there is wrong, I may bring the spirit of forgiveness, that where there is discord, I may bring harmony, that where there is error, I may bring truth, that where there is doubt, I may bring faith, and that where there is despair, I may bring hope, that where there are shadows, I may bring light, and that where there is sadness, I may bring joy. Lord, grant that I may seek rather to comfort than to be comforted, to understand than to be understood, to love than to be loved, for it is by self-forgetting that one finds, and it is by forgetting that one is forgiven, and it is by dying that one is awakened to eternal life. And that's what we have to do in here, by doing those steps. Realize how crazy my life was, how unmanageable it was, not just drugs and alcohol, food, men, sex. And there's three parts of the second step. What, powerlessness, admission, and I can't even think, I'm so nervous. Powerlessness, I can't think. Anyway, when I did that third step prayer, and I did it at that retreat, I got down on my knees. And I still get down on my knees today. Because he did that. He did that in that picture with his father. And I figured, you know what, if he can do it, I think I can do it. I at least deserve him that honor. You know, and sometimes I don't always do the right thing. And sometimes I know I'm not always on key. But, you know, I come back here to get my tune-up. Because I need tune-ups. I don't know about you all. I don't get them from my car, so I might as well get them from me sometimes, you know. Because I'm a girl. And I don't oil thing. It's, I had to learn all about that one. But anyway, I want to just say thank you so much for coming out tonight, and especially the Greenhouse people. You know, Greenhouse is a special place for me, and just like everybody else's, you have that special place. But remember those around you, and I say that all the time, because I don't. I need to hear what's coming out of my mouth, because I need to do it. That little newcomer that's sitting next to you, or that person that raised their hand tonight, the person that's here that's visiting, you don't know why they're here. We don't know why each other's here sometimes, but we need to remember this is our deal. This is what we're to do. This is our thing to do for him. And this is what this teaches us. If I want to show my gratitude and I want to show my God how much I love him, I have to give and serve others, not to be served, you know? And that's all I have to share. Thank you.